This week on the Northwest Politicast.
You'd expect to hear this from a Republican.
I would suggest to you, we don't really have an income problem. We have a spending problem.
But that's actually a Democrat criticizing Washington's runaway budget. Plus, a big-name member of the GOP seeks to end speculation about his future plans.
Do I have any interest in looking at other offices? I do not.
Also, the Senate punts on some key issues, as support for President Trump could be wavering.
A lot of Republicans, including some who are close allies of the president, started raising concerns about this anti-weaponization fund.
And a chat with our own Denise Whittaker about the Memorial Day special she's been working on that will air on Monday.
He even said, I don't want you to not have the barbecue. I don't want you to not celebrate the day off with friends and family. But while you're doing it, think about the service.
Now, here's Northwest News Radio's Jeff Pulcilla.
Well, a lot to get to on this Memorial Day weekend, but we're going to begin with Washington State's past leadership. Former Governor Christine Gregoire took the unusual step of criticizing the sitting governor. But what made it even more remarkable is that Gregoire and Ferguson are both Democrats. And as Northwest News Radio's Brian Calvert reports, when both sides of the aisle see an issue with the state budget, perhaps it does have a spending problem.
Democrats have held control of the Washington State Legislature for years. To be precise, it was 1997 when Republicans last ruled Olympia. In the decades since, there have been plenty of arguments from both Senate and House Republicans regarding the spending of Democrats. When he presided over his first budget, Governor Bob Ferguson, who faced a significant budget shortfall, was also critical of certain spending. So when he signed the current budget, he did so with reservations.
That's why I vetoed a few programs. It's also consistent with how I approach budgeting. If we have a proposal to do something in our budget, we've got to have the funding to do it.
Now there's another top Democratic voice joining the chorus that the state budget is unreasonable.
How we find ourselves at the end of every legislative session now is in the hole and projected to be in the hole.
Former Governor Christine Gregoire left office in 2013 when the state budget was $33 billion. Adjust that number for inflation and you're looking at roughly $47 million today. The current state budget, about $80 billion.
I think that's a little bit too much of a growth.
And then she said this.
I would suggest to you, we don't really have an income problem. We have a spending problem. And we're answering... And we're answering it by stacking one more tax, one more rule, one more regulation.
The applause you just heard was from members attending the Association of Washington Business Summit earlier this month. Gregoire was invited to speak. These days, the former Democratic governor leads Challenge Seattle, a coalition representing regional innovators and large employers. Conservatives have cheered on Gregoire for speaking out against state Democrats' spending.
And the one thing that the business community doesn't need is that lack of predictability. When was the last time we had an economic development plan? It's been over a decade.
Critics of Gregoire's comments, including former ally the Northwest Progressive Institute, a left-wing think tank, have argued that comparing old and current budgets using absolute dollar amounts just doesn't work. Washington today, they say, is not the same state that it was during Gregoire's reign. However, even Governor Ferguson, who beat his conservative challenger handily, believes spending has to be curbed.
We are not going to tax our way out of this thing. Not going to happen.
And he's been clear since his inauguration speech.
We face real challenges. Our state government is bogged down by too much bureaucracy.
The Olympian reached out to Democratic Representative April Berg, who chairs the House Finance Committee. Berg offers the context that during the same period the budget went from $33 to $80 billion, a million people were added to the state's population. The gap between high and low earners has widened, and we've experienced record amounts of inflation. The next time leaders in Olympia sit down to consider a budget, there might be a new consideration. After all, at your house, you're not allowed to spend more than you take in. Otherwise, you could lose everything. With Republicans and Democrats sounding more and more alike when it comes to overspending, the state house has a chance to closer resemble how Washington families have to approach how they spend dollars.
We've lived on luck. Our luck has worn out. It's time for us to step up and realize we have to plan. We have to understand the consequences of the actions that are being taken every year now.
Brian Calvert, Northwest News Radio.
Now, while Governor Bob Ferguson has publicly stated that Washington is spending too much money and taxing its citizens far too much, he hasn't really done much to stop it. In his first year in office, Ferguson signed the biggest tax increase in Washington state history, and in his second year, he signed into law the state's first ever income tax. And Gregoire's criticisms of Governor Ferguson have not gone unnoticed by Republicans. During a press availability on Thursday, Eastern Washington Congressman Michael Baumgartner addressed the issue and took the opportunity to eliminate any speculation about his future plans.
Credit to Governor Christine Gregoire speaking out about the reckless spending that's gone on in the Washington State Legislature with the Democrat leadership. I still remember the first budget I worked on with Governor Gregoire back, and she talked about a $30 billion operational budget. And of course, my first year in the state legislature, I was the prime sponsor of the bill to take five government agencies and turn them into two, so to consolidate and make government more streamlined. That was actually a governor's request bill that I ran and created CTS and DES. Department of Enterprise Services, Consolidated Technical Services, and then we had some contracting out provisions in there as well, too, that to her credit, Governor Gregoire passed. But so it's great to see her speak out. You know, by the same token, you look at what's gone on in the state, and we talk about how long it's been since you've had a Republican governor and the clutter that has built up. You know, it was still Governor Gregoire that worked the scheme to take Cheryl Flug's Republican state Senate seat and essentially do the old switcheroo after the voting deadline, you know, really high political corruption, for lack of any other term, when an incumbent Republican state senator was moved off the ballot in exchange. Well, strange coincidence of timing to be appointed by the governor to a highly paid position on the Growth Management Act. So, you know, our state has just been dominated by left-wing Democrats for a long time, and we're suffering the consequences. Certainly that period of time when I joined other Republicans running the state, we did a lot better, but it's gone forward. In terms of, you know, your question, do I have any interest in looking at other offices? I do not. I'm working hard for the people of Eastern Washington, and we're in the midst of our own job reapplication process there and working hard, and we're getting really good feedback from folks. And so I always say, whether people voted for me or didn't vote for me, you know, I work for them and try to do my best to represent Eastern Washington, and we'll continue to do that.
That's Republican Congressman Michael Baumgartner earlier this week.
Still to come.
Fourth and long for Senate Republicans, so they punt. We'll explain
when the Northwest Politicast returns after this.
Welcome back to the Northwest Politicast. I'm Jeff Pogula. Here's Aaron Wright.
Senate Republicans are heading on vacation rather than make a decision on two major items backed by President Trump. ABC News reporter Allie Pecorin joining me now. Allie, what is all this fighting about?
Yeah, so on Capitol Hill this week, we saw a sort of remarkable departure for Senate Republicans from the status quo. They bucked the president on two major priorities of his. So what was going on is the Senate was getting ready to consider this big win for President Trump, a roughly $70 billion bill to fund ICE and parts of Customs and Border Patrol. As Republicans were getting ready to put that legislation on the floor yesterday, they stalled out. And the main reason that that happened is because a lot of Republicans, including some who are close allies of the president, started raising concerns about this anti-weaponization fund. That's a pot of about $1.8 billion that the IRS was establishing as part of its settlement with the president to pay out people who alleged that they were violated by President Biden's DOJ, that President Biden's DOJ had weaponized the government against them. A lot of Republicans took issue with the creation of this fund, mainly because they were concerned that people who assaulted police officers on January 6th at the United States Capitol might be eligible to claim money from the fund. So they wanted to put some guardrails in place to try to stop this fund from being used for that purpose, and they were hoping to embed those guardrails inside that giant immigration bill. Negotiations over that reality fell apart yesterday. And so rather than moving forward on this $70 billion bill as was initially expected, Republicans just kind of threw up their hands and left town.
Are there any consequences for further stalling out this bill? It feels like we've been talking about these immigration funding bills for a really long time now.
Yeah, so President Trump had set a June 1st deadline to get this bill to his desk. This is a bill, you'll remember, that was meant to fund immigration and customs enforcement, and then parts of Customs and Border Patrol. And the reason that Republicans said they needed to move forward with this package is because when the Department of Homeland Security was funded after that some 70-odd day standoff that led to DHS being shut down, the agreement that was reached is that Democrats furnished the votes to fund the Department of Homeland Security, but did not provide funding for ICE or CBP in that funding bill because they were upset that they weren't able to negotiate reforms for ICE. So Republicans said, we need to give ICE and CBP the money that Democrats denied in the larger bill. What ended up happening, however, is that that money stalled out yesterday. Now, I should say this. It's President Trump's June 1st deadline. It doesn't have any huge consequences for the way that ICE and CBP operate because these agencies are already receiving funds from a separate bill that Republicans passed last year. So there's no immediate dire consequence. However, it's kind of a big loss for President Trump and a big moment to pay attention because Republicans are withholding something that the president wants from him. It's really the first time that we've seen Republicans willing to challenge the president in this way.
And do we expect the senators to be doing any kind of work over the holiday weekend to meet a resolution here?
There was a lot of frustration from Senate Republicans, many of whom feel, according to people that were in that room yesterday, that this is the administration's problem and therefore the administration's job to solve.
That's Capitol Hill correspondent Ali Pekoran speaking with our Aaron Wright. Also this week, the Seattle LGBTQ Commission is urging Mayor Katie Wilson to declare a civil emergency. Northwest News Radio's Lillian James explains why.
In a letter sent to city leaders, the commission outlined concerns about an influx of transgender and gender nonconforming people relying on local resources. It says more people are seeking refuge in Seattle due to legislation targeting these groups nationwide. Many community-driven organization leaders report that demand is rapidly increasing, and in some cases, it exceeds available capacity. The commission is recommending that city leaders explore emergency response measures focused on housing stability, healthcare access, public safety, community infrastructure, and long-term resilience planning. It also recommends conducting a formal assessment of how many individuals are coming to the city. Lillian James, Northwest News Radio.
Coming up next,
a preview of our Memorial Day special, Denise Whitaker reports, service and sacrifice.
With the Northwest Politicast continues after this.
Welcome back to the Northwest Politicast. I'm Jeff Pogula. Finally this week, we wanted to bring in our own Denise Whitaker, who has been, for the last several weeks, working on a lengthy special that will be airing on Memorial Day. It's entitled Denise Whitaker Reports, Service and Sacrifice. First off, Denise, thank you so much for taking the time.
Of course.
So tell me about this special that you're working on.
We're going to share stories, right? Stories from a Gold Star wife and mother who suffered the heartbreak of her husband killed in action with three children and how she's not necessarily overcome, but how she's making a difference in the community and really across the nation. We talk with young service members in their 30s, and this is what kind of really shocked me a bit, right? Not so much since we're seem to constantly be in some sort of wartime, but to have men in their 30s who are still serving actively share stories of how one has lost comrades already, only in training missions, the other one in deployments, and he's only 34 years old. So these are very interesting stories. And then other perspectives, right? The USO Northwest does so much work to help active duty people, but they also remember always our missing in action and our prisoners of war. And so Don Langang, the executive director of that organization, really helps bring it all together for us on some of the symbolisms and the things we want to think about. So we have lots of different segments, people, and stories. Our own Ari Hoffman from our sister station KVI is also sharing more about Jewish cemeteries here. You know, Jewish people need to be buried in Jewish cemeteries, not in a national cemetery like where you expect veterans to be. So he talks a little bit about maintaining those cemeteries, but also, right, the tradition of young people placing flags at those gravestones and really remembering. And I think that's the point, right? We don't want to forget these people.
Something very special from Memorial Day. And you've been involved in this stuff, working with veterans and working with service members for years and years. How did you get involved with this?
I think mostly living in this part of the country, right? How many of you listening don't know somebody who is currently serving because of all the bases? We have every military branch
JBLM,
represented here,
we
right?
Have, Kitsap, Naval Base, Banger,
Kitsap, yeah. Everett, Whidbey.
Absolutely.
Then we have Fairchild Air Force Base. We have so many. And so whether they're retired or still serving, all of us know people. So my husband is an Army veteran, 82nd Airborne. He was stationed at Fort Bragg. I didn't meet him till right when he got out of the Army. So I didn't know him during his service. But of course, he's shared stories and he's been privileged to do some other things as a veteran too. And then we have so many friends who are retired Navy people from Kitsap. So again, I think just living in this military community, I feel you can't help but embrace it in one way or another. And sometimes, you know, we often talk about, today we're talking about, you know, this Memorial Day special and remembering those who have died. But on a daily basis, I think we can honor the lives lost by checking in on our service members, on our veterans, on those who are retired or served. We often think about, check in on that elderly neighbor. You know what? Check in on that veteran. Make sure they're doing okay and just say hello. And so many, you think, oh, it's repetitive to say thank you for your service. Even on Memorial Day, service members appreciate that. And they know that you're thanking them for their service, but perhaps that also helps them know that you're thanking them for the comrades they may have lost as well.
Well, and I think for a lot of people who have not served or don't know someone who has served, Memorial Day tends to be, hey, it's a day off of work. It's a 3-day weekend. It's the unofficial start to summer, barbecues and all that. But it's really about a solemn remembrance of who we've lost.
It is. And you know, that 34-year-old that I mentioned, active duty right now, he is in the Marines. He was a helicopter pilot. He was injured. So now he's a drone pilot. And that's how he's able to continue his service. He did not want to leave the Marines. He even said, I don't want you to not have the barbecue. I don't want you to not celebrate the day off with friends and family. But while you're doing it, think about the service. Think about those who have been lost. And, you know, I think that's a really good perspective to think of it that way. Nobody's asking you not to do those fun things, not to enjoy your 3-day weekend hiking or doing something else, but just take a moment. Maybe that's saying a prayer on your own. Maybe that's looking online. Who's the most recent service member killed in action in the country or in Washington? Read about their biography and read about the life they had and just think about them for a minute. And now you've made a difference in some way.
Denise Whitaker reports Service and Sacrifice. It airs on Memorial Day several times throughout the day, 5 a.m., 8 a.m., noon, and 3 p.m. It's also available online. Just go to nwnewsradio.com and listen to it there anytime you like. Denise, thank you so much for your efforts on this.
Absolutely.
And that'll do it for this episode of the Northwest Politicast. Thank you for spending part of your day with us and for following the discussions, debates, and decisions shaping politics and public policy across the Northwest. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, follow, and leave a rating and a review in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. That helps more listeners find us, which helps keep this civil conversation going. You could also share this episode with someone else who cares about the topics we discussed today. And don't forget to check out Denise Whitaker Reports, Service and Sacrifice, Memorial Day, right here on Northwest News Radio. I'm Jeff Pogelip. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week.